Pat Bickley and Murata.
Home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kelflifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Now.
Yeah, Bickley and Murata live from the Octane Community Studios on this Thursday. No blast today if you're tuned in for that, but there's a good reason why. It's because we've cleared the way for our next guest, getting ready for the Western Conference Finals, but kind enough to join us here on the show. Jay Crowder checks in here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Jay, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for the time today. Got to know, first off, we've talked so much about the Suns, you know, taking care of business, sweeping the Nuggets, getting this week's worth of rest. Is this about the time of the week that you guys are jonesing to get back on the court?
For sure. I mean, but at the same time, we are taking these days and trying to get better ourselves and trying to apply it to the next round as much as possible. But we're taking this time to watch film and get prepared as much as possible for the next round.
Now, you made some headlines the other day when you had mentioned that you look like a genius for coming to Phoenix. One of the really cool things that has happened is how you become such a fan favorite. And it happened before you D'd up LeBron with the tenacity that you did, but that had a lot to do with it. And the salsa dance, I mean, that puts you in Suns lore forever, my man. Your thoughts on just becoming a fan favorite in the city of Phoenix, Arizona?
I mean, honestly, man, the only way to really do that is by winning and by being a part of a winning organization, a winning team, a winning environment, and that's what I try to bring. And I just think I do it naturally. I just do it, try to win games and try to do my part, do my job on a nightly basis. And I think the fans appreciate that, and I appreciate them for the support and then all season long that they've given us and given myself. So. We're going to continue to go out there and do what we do.
Yeah, I like that you said it that way. You can only do that kind of stuff when you're winning. And those moments came in the closing moments of the Lakers game. But going back to earlier in the series, I know a lot of Suns fans took offense to the Lakers' sideline antics at Game 3, I believe it was, in the third quarter of that game when nothing was even locked up. How much did that bother you individually? How much did that bother you guys as a team?
I mean, we're in the middle of a battle of a tough playoff series. So, obviously, any motivation that you can use in a battle, you want to use that to your strength. So, we definitely use that moment in time in our series as motivation, and we felt like we was going to try everything we had to get get the last laugh because we felt like those guys were being disrespectful Game 3. And we just want to respond to it, and I think we responded to it the right way by winning the series.
Now, one of the cool things is everybody, I think in Phoenix, they got to see you play in the bubble for the Heat, and what a great contributor you were during their run in the bubble. Your ability to play defense, to be hard-nosed and competitive against guys who are bigger than you, you really seem to embrace that. How come? What is it about you when it comes to those matchups?
I mean, it's a challenge, and I think I'm the type of player to stand up to any challenge and try to give it my best and see where I stand. I just feel like that's just my mindset. And I honestly feel like no job is too big, no task is too big, and I will conquer it at some point. So I just give it my all. I just step up to the challenge, step up to the plate, and take it on head on. So that's my mindset.
Jay Crowder of the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Going back to, obviously the big story that happened yesterday, and I know you can't talk a lot about the details of what you know about Chris Paul's status, but could you share what your personal reaction was to getting the news about Chris Paul testing positive for COVID, Jay?
Just adversity that we're going to overcome together. That's all I can really speak on. That's my first reaction. It's just a little adversity to where you want to be, and that's to be the last team standing, so. We're where you need to be. We'll be fine, and that's all I can really say about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, we totally get that. The one thing that was interesting, and I think this is what my partner was getting at, is Monty said that even without Chris, there was an incredible spirit at practice the other day, and it's almost like you guys have this mindset that you are not going to be derailed by any kind of adversity. How prevalent is that belief among this basketball team?
I mean, it's very high. I mean, we feel like coming into it, we knew. I did my part of preaching about adversity to the guys, younger guys, about their first playoff series that they're going into. It's going to be challenges and adversity, and you got to stick together. And I think this is one of them. This is another one of them that we have to overcome, and we will overcome. But that's our mindset. That we had that mindset before we even had our first playoff game. So it's just another adversity milestone that we got to overcome, and we will overcome it.
Jay Crowder of the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. I often tell my partner this. My favorite part of watching basketball is when shooters get hot, especially from 3-point range. And you've always been very willing to shoot the three, even when it's not falling. We saw that earlier in the playoffs. But you're coming off the Denver series. I just looked it up, Jay. It's the highest percentage you've ever had in any playoff series in your career from 3-point range. My question is, how hard is it to get to that point as a 3-point shooter where you have the short memory and you're always willing to put up the next shot?
I think it's just you have to put the work in first. That's the only way you can continue to tackle the challenges of having a shooting slump. You got to continue to put the work in. And once you put that work in, when no one else is around, no one else is looking, it makes your job a lot easier when the things get tough. You continue to trust yourself, trust the process of the work that you put in, the body of work that you put in, and just continue to do your job. And I think that's my mindset. I built that mindset by obviously failure and obviously putting in work, a lot of work. So that's how you overcome it.
Hey, what has your reaction been to just the reaction of Suns fans, not only in the arena where we had the little homie taking off his shirt and just getting nuts during a timeout, and then, of course, the Suns and four guy who just took a Nuggets fan apart in that building. What do the players think about what's going on inside the fan base right now?
I mean, we're excited, just excited as our fans are, and we are very appreciative of the support. Especially, we felt it really in Denver. Obviously, we felt it at our home. Our home crowd has been doing great all year. We've been feeding off that, especially here in the playoffs. But when we traveled out to our playoff game in Denver, and we felt like the city was behind us there. We knew it was real, and we were getting close to like some high level fan base cheering. But we were excited to close that series out in Denver just to see how much fans we had in the stands there and to bring it home and obviously get this next series underway against hopefully probably our home fans.
Yeah, it was amazing. You mentioned the crowd in Denver, the amount of Suns fans that were there. At the end of that game, the TNT broadcast kind of zoomed out and they showed the Suns fans and Chris Paul was kind of saluting them and he made reference to it. I've never seen anything like this. Now, you've played on some teams that have some pretty good national followings. You were with the Boston Celtics for a while. Have you ever seen anything like that? Because I've been watching Suns basketball for over 40 years, Jay, and I've never seen that kind of turnout on the road before.
It was crazy. In a playoff game, it was really probably the most fans I've ever seen on the road travel, like in Philly road team arena out. So it was definitely a special moment. I took it in as well. Just as Chris did, I just took that moment in because I knew how rare it is. So it was definitely great to be a part of.
One of the things that I love about this basketball team is when I look at you and I look at Book and I look at CP3, you guys are hardcore dudes who don't mind when it's a little nasty, when it's a little chippy. You guys can hang in that environment very, very easily. In fact, you seem to like it a little bit. What does that kind of toughness bring to a basketball team?
I mean, it just brings a different... just set the mindset for your whole team. I think when you have guys who are mentally stable, mentally prepared for war, any battle, that trickles down to each guy in the locker room. So I just feel like when your leaders have that mindset, it's definitely beneficial, especially during this time of the year, playoff basketball, when you're trying to fight to be the last team standing. So it's great to be a part of other guys having the same mindset and mentality as me. And our whole locker room being on the same page with the same mindset.
Jay Crowder, the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. There's two sides of the coin when it comes to this much rest. Yes, it's good for the players to be able to get in tune physically for the next series. But, of course, you know, here we are talking on Thursday with a possible game on Sunday, and you guys don't know who you're playing yet. How difficult is that that preparation process with that unknown of who the next opponent is?
Honestly, it's not that difficult. It's two teams. We're preparing for both of them. that's the only way I can really tell you what's going on right now. We're preparing for both teams. And it's a lot on our plate, but we're taking it in each and every day. Each guy, each scout, and our younger guys are doing a good job of digesting whatever our coaching staff is feeding us and they're trying to apply it to the court. So we're applying for two teams right now. We're preparing for two teams right now, and That's the game plan.
All right. One of the really cool things of this postseason is seeing the way that DA has grown and matured to the point where Nikola Jokic just signed a jersey for him and it said, "You are a beast." What has been like? What has it been like for the leaders of this team to grow this young man? What has it entailed? And how proud are you of this young guy to be so receptive to coaching?
Honestly, it's been a great year for us to grow and grow with him, grow together, grow as a unit, and that's what's been going taking place. Just a lot of growth in all areas, especially with him being able to apply himself and tell his teammates what he needs, and his teammates telling him what we feel like we need out of him, and he's applying it on a nightly basis. It's been great to be a part of. And before I even came on air with you guys and to say I'm proud of him, I told him to his face I'm proud of him, especially after Game 4 in Denver. I told him I'm proud of him. And that jersey, Jokic sending the jersey to him showed his respect for you, and you got that by just playing basketball, not by talking, not by anything, but between the lines, mutual respect. And that's the highest respect you can get from your peers, is the respect on the court. And he just earned him one by the league MVP. So that's great to see, and great to be a part of and see his growth.
Yeah, Jay, there's been a lot of talk around the league about, you know, the league with the 72-game schedule. LeBron kind of threw gasoline on the fire by talking about all the injuries in the playoffs right now. But as a player, I mean, you had a short offseason as well, making that deep playoff run to the finals with Miami. Does it feel different to you at this point of the playoffs than it has in years past?
I mean, I can't say that it has. Obviously, it's been quick turnarounds all year. Mm-hmm. But I've been doing what I can, take care of myself off the court when I'm not on the court as much as possible. And obviously that has to increase with the schedule increase. So you have to take care of yourself. And I feel like I'm so locked in on 8 more wins. It's kind of sick.
Nice.
that I'm that locked in on it, because I don't need to think about rest or how tired I am. I'm just so locked in on taking care of myself and preparing myself as much as possible for the next game each and every night.
All right, so here's a CP3 question that has nothing to do with COVID-19. Are you confident in talking to him and vibing with him that he's going to want to stay here in Phoenix for the long term? Because you're here a couple more years, and there's a really good thing going right now, Jay, and you know that.
I'm going to do my part. He got me here, so I'm going to do my part to try to keep him safe. Why would he bring me? Why would he call my phone, blow my phone up, and ask me to come here and beg me to come here for 1 year, you know? So I'm going to do my part.
You just made a lot of people in our audience very happy, Jay.
And you still like this place, even though it's 118 and the half the state's on fire, right, Jay?
I'm actually doing this interview outside in my backyard right now.
There we go.
My shirt is off.
You've been phenomenal, man. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today.
I got one more frivolous question for Jay before we let you go. We've had Mikal Bridges and Javon Carter on. I've asked them about their shoes. I'm not going to ask you about your shoes, but I'm going to ask you about number 99. You've worn it pretty much everywhere you've been. What's that all about, Jay?
When I got traded to I got traded to Boston from Dallas, I got traded for a player named Rajon Rondo. He was number 9, and I was number 9 at the time. And I want to show respect to a champion, to a guy who may have his number lifted in the rafters one day in Boston Celtics history. And I changed my number, and my best friend at the time was playing football. He was number 99. And I changed my number. I just added another 9 and just tried to be like my best friend. With all due paying respect to one of my favorite players, Rajon Rondo. So That's how that came about.
Very cool. And I think you're the only guy in the league with that number, so it's working out for you.
Yeah, it is.
Jay, thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate when you come on the show.
Yep.
You got the whole city behind you. Best of luck in the next round. Thank you. Jay Crowder, the Phoenix Suns, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports
Love
Line.
Love that guy.
Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle.
Jay Crowder.
Visit CoulterNissan.com.
Great jungle guy. Love that guy. Help me out here, man. Mine's not any good.
You're doing it fine.
That was a good last question, though. I appreciated that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
You know, I wonder about stuff like that. Well, I wonder why Javon Carter wears two different shoes. I wonder why Mikal Bridges is the only guy on the team that never changes his shoe style. And I wonder about numbers.
How about Jay Carter going, look, Chris Paul recruited me here. I'm not letting him go after
That's fantastic.
A year. Isn't that excellent?
That is fantastic. Yeah. Speaking of the little frivolities that I do notice, I don't know if you saw my tweet on Sunday where it was a little troll in me. I get it. But after the Suns complete the sweep of the Nuggets, I asked the question, has a team ever been swept in the NBA playoffs while wearing four different uniforms? Because the Nuggets made that distinction. Gambo responds, only you would notice that.
That's true. That's a good point. Gambo's right.
Thanks again to Jay Crowder for the Suns for making that happen. You're right. He hasn't been here long. It hasn't been a normal year for Suns fans, definitely. But the level of his profile, just in terms of being a fan favorite, has gone up exponentially in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of the stuff that he talked about, the salsa dance, the physical play that you asked him about, he tries to be the guy that gets under the skin, whether it's on defense, or he's a guy that can get under your skin on offense, too, with his propensity to get the N1 on the three-point attempts.
Yeah. I've said this many, many times. I watched Jay Crowder at Marquette, and I knew back then that this is one of those guys that he's a player's player, because he's so competitive that he is going to battle whoever he's defending. He doesn't take those possessions off, and he never loses faith in his jump shot, and he just brings incredible swagger to the court. Suns have three of these guys: Chris Paul, Jay Crowder, Devin Booker. They've got other tough players. Torrey Craig is very tough. Javon Carter is very tough. But I'm talking about elite-level players and elite-level toughness, and these guys have it. And to me, it's really central to everything that's going on here. And I love a couple of things that he said. I love how this team continues to reward DA with positive praise for all that he's endured and everything he's heard and how he's worked. That's a sign of a team that is truly connected. They're not screaming at him to get better because of their own selfish reasons. They recognize the love involved here. And that to me gives me the feels, Vinny. And then secondarily, the fact that Jay Crowder just said without any hesitation, we're going to overcome this.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye me, man. I'm not arguing with that guy.
It's not the first thing they have to overcome on the Chris Paul front this postseason. Again, we went back in time, and it's not going that far back in time, but I remember driving home from game one against the Lakers, and you have this great feeling. Wow, the Suns just played their first playoff game. The crowd was into it. They beat the Lakers. They're up 1-0, and then the butt comes. And it was a big one. But Chris Paul did not look anything close to himself, even though he played 36 minutes. How are they going to get by this?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, Chris Paul still had an influence on that series. Obviously, game four, he was huge in crunch time, but his numbers were way down. His production was way down. He still had an influence on it. But I think the bigger factor in all of that is the ability of the rest of the roster to rally around those things. They've talked about depth. They've talked about connectivity all season long, and it got put to the test against the Lakers. And then, after the unfortunate Chris Paul injury, they got a couple of breaks their way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any doubt. I'm not going to doubt Jay Crowder when he says we're going to overcome this. And we don't even know what needs to be overcome at this point still.
Listen, in a piece I wrote today, if Chris Paul cannot play in game one, I think it would be a travesty if he's asymptomatic. I'll reverse my stance if he is symptomatic. But I do think that Chris Paul has done so much for this franchise and given this franchise so much sincerity and effort that this would be a great opportunity to pay him back. Because both the franchise and the player, they don't have championship rings. They have a ton of championship heartbreak between them. Their stories are very similar when it comes to playoff success or lack thereof. Chris Paul has done such work to get the culture and this team to a better place, along with others, of course. But this would be a great way to reward him and say, okay, you know what? You need to get yours as well. We need to get you to an NBA Finals, and we got you. We got your back. And I think the basketball team is vibing on that. And again, if they take on the Clippers without Kawhi, there's no reason they can't beat the Clippers in Game 1 without Chris Paul. If the Clippers do not have Kawhi Leonard, the Suns very much can beat the Clippers without Chris Paul.
Well, this is why, too, I think, to the question you asked, Jay, about Chris Paul's future in Phoenix, the we got your back sentiment from, from this team. I get it. I think we saw a good portion of that in round one against the Lakers. But the last time Chris Paul was this close was the Western Conference Finals in 2018 against the Golden State Warriors, and he unfortunately went down with an injury. And the rest of the Houston Rockets most decidedly did not have that "we got your back, let's do this for Chris." That was the series with the unbelievable string of 27 missed three-pointers in a row. So the Suns, you know, to your question about his future here, I feel really, really good about that those possibilities. But the Suns as an organization, as a team around Chris Paul, have potentially an opportunity to fortify that even more. If he misses a game or two in this series and they do overcome it, like Jay Crowder said, that's very reassuring to a player. All right, you know, I'm not there for them, but they were there for me.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be this reciprocal action going on.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so I think that I take solace in that. Jay Crowder has just been a phenomenal addition to this basketball team. And Chris Paul obviously was right in the heart of all of that. When Chris Paul decided he was going to attempt to come to Phoenix, part of the story that I never knew is that he had to do some convincing of Phoenix that, hey, yeah, I can do this for you guys. And then he's working the phones along with James Jones. But, you know, CP3, as you know, he's a legend. And he called Jay Crowder and said, "Why don't you join me?" Okay. That's just awesome.
Yeah, and I had the same reaction to you. I think it was a Saturday afternoon when the Jay Crowder signing news came out. And I was with my kids, and I went, "Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought of that as a possibility, but sign me up for that."
Without a doubt. And again, like I said, I saw the guy play in college. We saw him play in Boston. We saw him with the Heat. And it was, I didn't even know he was available. And when we heard it, I just thought, that's the perfect fit for this basketball team. And he's pretty much turned out to be that guy. Yep. And you can tell his teammates love him.
Jay Crowder's final college game was at the Suns Arena. Sweet 16 for Marquette against Florida. That's
the guy. I did not know that.
I covered that game for ArizonaSports.com.
How did Jay play that day? Do you remember?
He had 15 points, 5 of 15. I thought that Marquette team was overmatched a little bit. Florida had Bradley Beal on that team, and he had a really good game. But yeah, just the, you know, that's where it
How
ended.
About
and
that?
This is where it's picking
that?
Up. Going back to that whole idea too about Chris Paul, the ability to overcome his absence, should that be a thing. Monty Williams, the head coach of the Suns, spoke yesterday, and you know, they did have to deal with it potentially in round one too with the shoulder injury. And he was asked, "What did that shoulder injury tell you about the rest of your team?"
I think guys are always ready to play, especially in these moments. Now, obviously, Chris Paul is not someone that you fill in for easily, but it's the reason why your player development program is so important. We've had guys this year step up in big moments at that position, from Cam Payne to Etuan. Book has even played some point for us from time to time. So our guys are ready for the challenge.
Yeah, Monty Williams said he's gone down that road as well, considering what lineups would look like if Chris Paul can't go initially.
Thankfully, we put ourselves in a position where we have time, Craig, but at the same time, as a coach, I have to think through those scenarios, and I've thought a lot about it, and we haven't made a decision just yet because we don't have to, but it is a process for me to not only think about, you know, who starts, but the rotation after that, because it can change a lot based on who you go with as a starter and how your bench rotation changes.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the onus will fall, obviously, on Cameron Payne if this does come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
He's been really good in the playoffs. He's been really good all season long, and even going back to last year, before Chris Paul was an influence on him, I think Cameron Payne was a guy that appreciated the opportunity that he got.
Mm-hmm.
He played really well as a reserve in the bubble, and he could be the starter. Monty Williams says that will change nothing for CP15's preparation.
I think the week will be fine. As I said, we don't know what's going to happen, but you know, Cam has played with the starters a lot this year, so it's not anything that he hasn't done or he's not used to. So that part won't change.
Yeah, there's a conflict going on internally for me, because the first question I asked Jay Crowder was kind of how I'm feeling. Like, I'm wanting to watch the Phoenix Suns play basketball again on one hand. On the other hand, you're like, okay, let's drag this out as long as we can. Go Utah Jazz in game six, and let's see what happens on Tuesday night. But you get that feeling? Like, it's been a while. I mean, it's Thursday. We haven't watched the Suns play basketball since Sunday.
Yeah, I don't. I've heard other people say that, and I don't feel that. I because I know it's coming. For what it's worth,
you're okay to wait.
Yeah. I am, and I know next segment we're going to get into some of the stuff that went down last night and how it applies to the Phoenix Suns and all that. But yeah, I think that I see the good in that four game sweep of the Nuggets and. Just once again, think about if that not had happened. Think about if Denver won that game. Now suddenly you got to find a closeout win against the Nuggets without Chris Paul. Here's the last thing about it. This is what I think when I talk about Chris Paul and Jay Crowder and Devin Booker now, as much as I do about their mental toughness. You watch some of these playoffs, and we have seen colossal meltdowns from basketball teams. We just saw one last night in Philadelphia. Okay. The Phoenix Suns seem to be beyond that. They seem to be a basketball team that's got enough poise about them that they're not going to lose their minds negatively in a game. Like last night, Marcus Morris got Rudy Gobert to reach out and received a technical. Now, they both got technicals upon review. Marcus Morris tried that stuff with Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder wasn't having any of it. Didn't even pay attention to Marcus Morris at one point in time. So, I mean, I look at this and I see a basketball team and I take most solace in that when they're at full strength, they're of a mindset that they are not going to have a colossal meltdown.
I get that feeling as well.
And that's huge because you never know how this stage is going to affect certain players.
Yeah. And they've all dealt with it pretty well so far.
Yep.
Win tickets to the Suns' first home Western Conference Finals game in over 10 years. Just text the word ticket to 620-620 for your chance to score the hottest tickets in town. That's ticket to 620-620. Coming up next, as Bick mentioned, the NBA playoffs have been filled with all kinds of twists and turns, and that did not change on Wednesday night. We'll get into what happened next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns' run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Marotta talk Suns in the Western Conference Finals now.
That's a demon's game, man. That's a game that haunts you. That's a game that you can be talking about for years. Maybe not. Maybe they come back. Man, that is going to be a hard one to swallow.
Brian Windhorst of ESPN, following last night's 76ers loss to the Atlanta Hawks in Game 5 of that Eastern Conference semifinal. A game, by the way, that they led by 26 points with 8.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. And what we saw from that point on was it was almost unfathomable to watch.
Oh, yeah.
A game change like
that. Yeah, it really was.
Because once, at least me watching that game, when the Hawks started to really chip into it and they got it down to 10, then it started to get to single digits, I didn't think the Sixers had a chance to win that game. The change in momentum was so one-sided, maybe more so than anything I've ever seen. It was the 76ers couldn't make a play. And in the last 4 minutes of that game, they couldn't score a point.
And then to hear the full-on grip inside that arena, inside this, is it called the Spectrum still, Vinny? What's it called these days?
Wells Fargo.
Oh, okay.
Spectrum? Come on, that was like the 80s, Bick.
Listen, that was about the last time I stopped paying attention to stadium names.
Yeah, when stadiums had cool names and not corporate sponsorship.
Right.
And I get why they do it, but we used to have the Spectrum, the Omni,
the Coliseum,
the Mecca,
right?
The Forum,
yes, right, all that good stuff. Yeah, that was something to me, and the fallout on the East Coast must be fabulous. Peter Vesey tweeted out last night.
Wait a minute, he's still a thing?
He is still a thing.
Wow.
After the game last night, he was
your second 80s NBA reference in this.
There you go. Right? After the game last night, he tweeted out that Vladimir Putin would lose an election if Doc Rivers was his campaign manager. And I'm like, wow.
That's pretty rough.
It's pretty rough. I don't know how much of this was the fault of Doc Rivers, but I think, yeah, the Ben Simmons free throw shooting was just dreadful. And that game, to me, really set the table for the nightcap, which I did not expect at all. And that would have been a performance from the Clippers that I think really is fortuitous for the Suns. And maybe you don't feel this to the extent that I do, but to me, the worst case scenario for the Phoenix Suns was to have to go to Salt Lake City Sunday and have to deal with that crowd, with possibly not having Chris Paul. Now, you're guaranteed a couple of different things here. You're guaranteed either game one Sunday against a Clippers team that probably doesn't have Kawhi Leonard. Okay. They don't have Kawhi. We don't have Chris Paul. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to start Tuesday in either home or Salt Lake City. So props to the Clippers for doing the Suns a solid last night. I think that that was really one of those things that was good. And I think the Jazz are going to come back and win Game 6. So I think we're going to get the Game 7. I do think it will be the Jazz still. But I do think Chris Paul is going to get the maximum amount of time to get back on the court.
Yeah, Brian Windhorst on that Kawhi subject, he was on with Burns and Gambo yesterday and said this.
You guys have seen sprained knees before. You know, even on the low end, they're 2 to 4 weeks. And this is Kawhi Leonard we're talking about here. So I don't think it's a torn ACL. I mean, it's too much swelling right now. I guess it could be. But they don't think it's a torn ACL. And they're hoping that if they can advance maybe to the finals, he could come back. But you're asking this from a Suns perspective? I don't think you would see him in the conference finals.
Wow. All right, let's get to this. You just said it. You think the Jazz come back and win Game 6 in L.A. and force a Game 7?
I do. The Jazz have been very resilient all year long. They held on to that number one seed. They've got a really good basketball team. The only thing that would give me pause is if Donovan Mitchell retweaked that ankle to the point where he's not going to be explosive, because that, to me, was the Jazz's biggest problem in the second half. When the Jazz quit making three-point shots in the third quarter, Donovan Mitchell, he had no explosiveness at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was part of their issue. I do think they're going to come back and win. I do think they're going to force a Game 7 in Salt Lake City. I do think it'll be too much for the Clippers. And the Suns will get the Jazz as an opponent, but at least they'll get the additional rest. That's what I think is going to happen.
So I was just
going to
say, if that happens, if a Game 6 or Game 7 is forced by the Jazz, that's the optimum result from a rest calendar standpoint for the Suns, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been going back and forth throughout that series of who would you rather play, and, you know, it switches. If you're guaranteed a Game 7 and you know the Suns are going to play Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals on Tuesday, knowing everything you know about both teams right now, who do you want?
Mm-hmm. That's still a tough quest. Even without Kawhi Leonard, something about the Clippers freaks me out. But I'm going to say that the Kawhi Leonard injury would make me prefer the Clippers.
Me too.
I've been vacillating back and forth on this.
There's nothing wrong with vacillating.
No. No, exactly. So, but
I'd make a great T-shirt. Maybe not. Yeah, but the Mitchell question is out there, because you're right, he did look different. But even, you know, earlier in the postseason, when he came back in the Memphis series, what we've seen in the Clippers series, he was getting his.
Mm-hmm.
So last night was really the first night since he returned where he's like, that doesn't look the same.
Yeah,
that broke his streak of consecutive 30-point games, by the way.
Now, for all the hand wringing sometimes about Paul George, he was pretty clutch last night. He had a good vibe about him last night.
Yeah, but now, no Kawhi, everybody's going to point at the fact that, okay, they're one win away from the Western Conference Finals again. What happened to Paul George last time this happened? He, you know, he went in his shell.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's a whole franchise history of the Clippers blowing these opportunities and not getting to the Conference Finals. So, to me, yes, we saw Kevin Durant two nights ago answer questions. We saw Paul George last night answer questions. I was much more thoroughly impressed with what Kevin Durant did as opposed to what Paul George did. Because George was brilliant, but he had a ton of help, too.
Oh, he did. Reggie Jackson had a great game.
Marcus Morris has been really good for them.
Oh, yeah. Marcus Morris made a couple of really huge shots last night. What they did is they basically had a trio of dudes try to fill the spot of Kawhi Leonard, and last night it worked. I just wouldn't bet on it continuing to work.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy Gobert wasn't very good offensively last night.
In his entire life.
Now that's funny.
I'm not wrong, am I?
No, you're not wrong.
Back to that Philly collapse, I wanted to play this too. This was Jay Williams from SportsCenter on the 76ers collapse.
Look, sometimes I feel like when I watch the 76ers play, they should just charge people $34.99 for a masterclass in how to blow leads. I mean, it's really embarrassing when you think about how talented they are. And what are the Sixers team known to do? Defensively, drawing a line in the sand. You have guys like Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, Joel Embiid when he's engaged. But the issue is here that Doc Rivers is going to have with this team is, can you afford to have Ben Simmons in late game scenarios? And he was 4 of 14 from the free throw line.
Defensively, can you take him
defensively,
out?
Defensively, well, you can't take him out defensively, but offensively, if it goes into Hack-a-Ben's strategy, how do you handle that? I mean, when you look at the numbers between Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons in fourth quarters of the last two games, they're abysmal. So this is a character challenge for the 76ers. You need Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris. When you're up by 26 points in the third quarter with 2 minutes left to go in the game, you look at your teammates and you say, there's no way in hell we're going to let this happen again. It just happened game four. You were up 18 points. So at the end of the day, your great players need to lead your organization. I know people can say, hey, what about Doc? There's a history there of him blowing leads as well. But this is on the players. This is on the best players on their team.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. It's on the players, but there's too much history in Doc Rivers' resume, by the way. And I will never, ever, for the life of me, understand Vic. You can understand big players, centers, being lousy at the free throw line, but a primary ball handler on your team shooting 32% from the free throw line is inexcusable.
As you said, this is nothing more than the lack of work put into his game, and that is inexcusable as a guy who's a team leader. Inexcusable.
I agree. We got Brooklyn, Milwaukee, game six tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The Nets,
or basketball.
The Suns might
Sign
have company
up.
In the conference finals
What are you
round.
Watching tonight? Are you watching the Diamond? No, that's not tonight. That's this afternoon.
Yeah, it starts in a couple minutes.
Thank God that dilemma's over.
Speaking of baseball, Monday they're cracking down on sticky stuff. There's a lot of whiny pitchers around baseball right now. We'll get into that and the potential future of one Torrey Lovello. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Dan Bickley and Vince Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Go!
Yeah, when we were doing our D-backs on deck, you said it's been a strange Major League Baseball season. It's going to get more strange because of the crackdown that's starting on Monday. Unless there's some sort of 11th hour stay of execution from Major League Baseball based on what we're hearing from these whiny pitchers.
I like the way you put that.
Tyler Glasnow of Tampa Bay, Garrett Cole of the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
I guess Garrett Cole, it's easier for him to express himself when it's not a question that he's asked about whether or not he's cheated before.
Here's the thing about this that I think is interesting. So Major League Baseball is going to take these incredibly drastic measures in the middle of a baseball season, and it's going to start on Monday. And that's how serious they look at this issue. And the reaction from the players has been unbelievable. Garrett Cole, like you said, practically begged Major League Baseball yesterday to talk to us, deal with us, please. Don't just do this. Don't you want our input? And you're like, what is the matter with you? Tyler Glasnow, who's a good young pitcher, blamed an injury on not being able to on not having foreign substance to be able to control the baseball better.
Because he had to grip the ball harder than he normally does. His philosophy was always to grip it like an egg, and he could do that because he had the advantage.
Without a doubt.
Yes.
You're right. And so,
but this is not a grip issue that Major League Baseball is cracking down on. It's irrefutable. If you have something sticky on your hand, you're going to be able to grip the ball better.
Yeah, and you're going to be able to snap it
and
better.
And that's an issue. But that's where it is.
Yeah.
The spin rates and the dominance shown by pitchers as opposed to hitters is what they're trying to curb. And maybe it's a, maybe it's a mistake by Major League Baseball.
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that.
Do you think spin rate is more to blame for this decrease in batting average and offense as opposed to launch angle theory?
The answer to that would be yes. I think spin rates has really tilted this playing field dramatically, or Rob Manfred would not be doing this. And I think it's because getting late movement on the kind of velocity you're seeing in Major League Baseball, it's unhittable. Al Leiter's kid, that great young college pitcher, did you see that video that was on Twitter of what it's like to stand in against that guy?
Yeah, 98-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, coming up high at a guy's chin.
Yeah.
The fact that they're using this stuff, they have no idea they do know where the baseball is going. Their control isn't the same. They're plunking people. And here's the thing, too. Major League Baseball pitchers share clubhouses with hitters. Don't they think about their own hitters?
No. But your point on, or I know you brought this point up earlier in the week, and I'm not saying it's not out there.
Uh-huh.
But the stickiness, the tack to this spider tack stuff makes it difficult to predict because it is so sticky. And I did see the picture of Trevor Bauer with the baseball on his palm upside down.
Yeah.
Just stuck there. Maybe he just needs to wash his hands. I don't know.
You never know with Trevor.
But you don't know with the release point. But what the pitchers like Tyler Glass now are arguing, I can't grip the ball. So that could be, in turn, just as dangerous. If I don't have the advantage of having a grip or attack on the ball, it could be just as dangerous for hitters.
Okay, this is the pitcher's contention that we have always had substances to abuse. It's so laughable. On one end, it's true, okay? Trevor Bauer, the video you're talking about, he did that to make a point, and he claimed what he was doing in that video, holding a ball in his palm of his hand, the ball just sticking there like it was on Velcro. He said that was nothing more than sweat and rosin. Pitchers still have access to rosin, okay?
Yeah.
So they've always.
And why do they? To improve their grip.
To improve their grip. The problem is they've gotten now to a level of substance that has just made it almost impossible to put a baseball in play. And the whining is laughable. You've got Gerrit Cole asking baseball to work with you.
Yeah, here's Gerrit Cole.
It's so hard to grip the ball. For Pete's sake, it's part of the reason why almost every player on the field has something, regardless if they're a pitcher or not, to help them control the ball. I think certainly the intent, I agree with. Uniformity, I agree with. I would encourage the commissioner's office to continue to talk with us, please, because we're the ones that throw the ball. They don't. And we're the experts in this situation, and we're aligned in terms of intent with the commissioner's office as well.
Yeah, for the first time, I do see the point on grip. I get that. But, again, they're not trying to.
You've played baseball.
Yeah.
Did you ever use a substance? No. Was it hard to grip a baseball? What these guys have been so dominant now for a short period of time. The pitching numbers over the last three seasons are incredible. They don't want to give it up.
But again, I think, and I'm not dismissing it, but I think it's in combination with this change in theory of hitting.
Okay.
Where home runs are good, singles are not good.
Well, okay, so what I think is going to be really interesting, and they're going to monitor all this stuff, and what will baseball look like? There are people ripping Rob Manfred for not even having a press conference. He hasn't even discussed this issue with anyone. It's just, boom, this is what we're doing.
And that's why I asked the question, too, could this be a mistake? Because it came from the desk of Rob Manfred, and everything that comes from the desk of Rob Manfred has been a mistake.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. baseball is just darn near unwatchable right now, and it's a shame. It's a sport that you and I both grew up with, and it's losing me, man. It's just losing me.
How about the language on Gerrit Cole in that press conference? using the term for Pete's sake. Come on. There's kids listening.
That was kind of quaint and old-timey, wasn't it?
It really was. He's not that old a guy.
Right. For Pete's sake, whippersnappers?
I've always wondered who Pete is.
Yeah, yeah, why was everybody so concerned about his sake?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, maybe it's a Saki. All right.
That'd be a great joke. That'd be a great radio name.
Pete Saki.
No.
Oh, that'd be
Pete's sake.
Pete's sake.
It's time for the top of the hour news. Pete's sake reporting.
That's pretty good. I like that. There was a
it's
traffic,
amazing, like clockwork every day, right around 1 o'clock. This,
we get stupid.
This just gets goofy.
There was a traffic reporter in Chicago, went by the name of Lane Closure. I'm like, yeah, that's your name. Yeah, that's it. Lane Closure.
Then he got transferred to sports. What did he change his name to then?
Jim Shorts. Yeah, right? You know what I mean?
We will focus on the historic collapses in the history of sports and other subjects next in social studies. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.